Our final speaker of the day is Roger White. Roger is a criminal justice researcher and activist and has been involved in racial and economic justice organizing for over 10 years. He's just finished a book of essays called Postcolonial Anarchism. Thanks. I'm really glad you could be here, Roger.
Thanks.
So y'all are some troopers. You've been sitting through a lot of talking. How y'all doing? You all right? Okay. I'm going to be really brief. I have to actually use the bathroom, so you're in luck. But I did want to say just a few words today about prisons and cops and the culture war. I actually came up with the title for what I was going to talk about today before I actually knew what I was actually going to say. So I've sort of like, you know, in a few weeks sort of trying to figure out exactly what I wanted to say or the kind of points that I wanted to make. And I heard that the Justice Department came out with this press release that there are over 1.2 million people behind bars in the United States, the highest number ever, the highest rate of incarceration in any country, period. And it wasn't startling, but it sort of help me to put into context some of the propaganda that's come out over the last few years about a leveling off of incarceration and all this talk about reentry and, you know, all this money being thrown out as if somehow we've reached some sort of turn the corner on the domestic security state. So not the case, according to the Justice Department. And of course, thanks to Bill Clinton's 1994 crime bill, today we have three times as many cops on the local, state, and federal level than we did in 1980. So there's a lot going on here around what we call criminal justice. And obviously I think that it's appropriate for anarchists to be thinking about these things. And we are, and doing something about them, because the prison system and sort of cops are the two probably most conspicuous forms of state repression that we encounter in society. And so obviously there's been lots of talk and lots of activism around this in the anarchist community. But if we're honest with ourselves, I think that we would sort of have to admit that we haven't been as effective as we could be. Obviously, Anarchist Black Cross does great support work. And there are organizations, Bring the Ruckus has an anti-prison working group, an abolitionist working group, and they also do cop watch stuff. I think Carwell and Rollo, they've been involved in a Cameron Boyd trying to do organizing around his death in San Francisco. Cops shot him dead. So there's stuff going on. But I think that part of the problem around some of the issues is the way that we're sort of framing the whole idea of public safety and what it means in relation to the domestic security state. I think that traditionally anarchists have sort of taken their cues when it comes to criminal justice from sort of materialist or Marxist kind of analysis that basically says that the reason or the causes of transgressive behavior are really the products of capitalism. And if you overthrow capitalism, then people will start to behave better in society. And that's a sort of a rough a sort of rendition of what the Marxists say about it. But if you take a look at sort of classic orthodox Marxist analysis of things like, say, racism and patriarchy, you see a pattern, which is if you overthrow capitalism, then everything else sort of just falls into place. And I think that that is very, very limited, and it's something that anarchists, I think, should begin to rethink in terms of our analysis of what's going on in terms of the domestic security state. And so this is problematic because, you know, part of making whatever kind of analysis you have real is actually going out and talking to people who don't agree with you about everything. And I've done a little bit of criminal justice activism, doing anti-prison stuff in Oakland, California. That's where I live. And, you know, you go knocking on doors and organizing against a prison or organizing, you know, against, you know, racist cops, harassment, brutality, so on and so forth. And you talk to people and you start talking about this sort of classic radical left analysis of why people are out shooting people and doing, you know, hurting people and raping and so on and so forth. And they look at you like you're fucking crazy. I mean, it just makes no sense. I mean, at the very least, it's irrelevant to what they're dealing with in their daily lives. And at worst, it's just, you know, they just get, you're on a planet, fuck, you know, get out of my face, you know. I want to go and watch TV and eat dinner, you know. I don't want to hear you. And so part of, I think, the challenge when it comes to talking about these issues is being able to really connect with folks in their everyday lives about what they see. You can talk all day long about class relations and capital exploitation. But when a mother comes home and there's gunshots and she can't go to sleep and she's worried about her kid coming home, so on and so forth, those are some real issues that need that you have to sort of deal with and grapple with. And I think that we've done a pretty poor job of being able to talk to folks about these kind of issues in a way that sort of connects with them. And so it's something that, you know, we should take a look at. I mean, I do think that what gets defined as violent crime in our society does have social origins. But I think that the class-based analysis has often ignored the role that other social institutions have played in the development of predatory behavior, like, say, the nuclear family, like TV, like patriarchy, for instance. I don't think it's an accident or an effect of capital that 90% of all violent crime in societies are generally committed by males. There's something else going on there. And so we need to take a look at that. And the view, I think this view also ignores the fact that interpersonal aggression has taken place in all sorts of societies, not just capitalist ones. And so you have crime across the board, you know, whatever, kind of, you know, communist, fascist, whatever. And, you know, after World War II, the business community got real serious about organizing against the labor movement and making sure that workers didn't get too uppity. And we saw a rash of repression after World War II in the late 40s and 50s. You all know the history. It took the cultural right just a little longer to get their shit together. But in 1968, they were able to elect Richard Nixon. And he launched his Law and Order campaign. I'm sure y'all, if you don't remember, maybe heard about it or read about it in books, about how there was this silent majority, you know, of folks who sort of didn't agree with the protesters and they didn't agree with the rioters, but they just didn't want to say anything. But they voted him in. And so this sort of began the narrative that we live with today around the culture war. Now, I think that typically when folks talk about the culture war or when folks hear that term, I think they're typically think of things like abortion and contraception, sexual liberation. And these are critical flashpoints in the culture war because I think they reference this whole, the issue of reproduction and the domination of female bodies, which is, I think, very critical to that. But it's also, but it's the state that's in charge of the death mills, that's in charge of the prisons and the cops. And I think that it's not enough to just view the cops and prisons as you know, the prison system as instruments of capital. There are also, and perhaps even more essentially, instruments of state genocide with the ultimate goal of killing off people of color, queers, freaks, women, anyone who doesn't fit into this sort of straight, white, Christian culture. And, you know, just to end on this, I think that the prison and cop system is essentially about genocide, and they are the frontline institutions of racial oppression and male domination and the enforcement of straight Christian social hegemony.